You're listening to Around Comics Book Club episode on Justice League International Volume 1, brought to you by InStockTrades.com. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. But this is a special episode. This is our book club episode on Justice League International, Volume 1. I'm Christopher Niesman. I'm joined by Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello, how are you?
Good. It's just the two of us, Tom.
It's just you and me. Just the two of us.
Late on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Getting ready to finish up the evening's affairs.
A long night of talking, bullshitting.
It's been good though. It's good. We've had a good night here recording Around Comics, but we've had an equally fun 6 or 8 weeks on our book club.
Yeah, this is a dense book. It required 2 months.
There's a lot of research that went into this, and getting into the motivations of all of the creators involved.
Of course, yeah. Interviews.
We're all joking very much, of course, because this is the Justice League International Volume 1, the beginning of the Bwahaha era of Justice League.
But did you notice how far into the series before you see your first Bwahaha?
Yeah, and we'll get to that. I want to remind people that InStock Trades was kind enough to sponsor our whole book club thing, as they do each and every time that we do this. And you can still get this at InStockTrades.com. They still have it for 47% off the cover price, but hurry, because that price will not be like that forever. It'll go up to 35% off, I think, is their standard discount on that. But I enjoyed this. It was something that I had been remiss in reading for a really long time.
You hadn't read this?
I'd never read this. You know, well, Tom, whenever we started doing Around Comics, I had primarily read a lot of Marvel and some independent stuff. I was never a really big DC reader, except for a few Batman issues here and there, a little bit of Superman, you know, the basic stuff. And so this is something that I had never really gotten into. So
what did you think of it?
I liked it. It was not what I expected. I had always heard about the Bwahaha era of Justice League, and so I expected this to be I expected it to be just straight comedy.
I don't think you get your first Bwahaha until the sixth issue. Mm-hmm. Once Booster Gold comes in.
Yeah.
That's the first time you get the first Bwahaha. It's not quite what you think it's going to be.
No, it started as kind of a conventional 1980s comic book. And you know, we should probably say, you know, all the creators that were
Keith
involved.
Giffen.
Uh-huh.
De Matteis. I always say just Giffen and De Matteis.
Giffen, De Matteis, Kevin Maguire. And
Terry Austin did the first issue. But then after that, it moves on. Inked by Al Gordon, I believe. Mm-hmm. That's the rest of them.
But it's really that Giffen, De Matteis, and Maguire team.
Yes.
Which they really kind of define this book. And
the iconic.
And we're kind of defined by this book, I think, in a lot of ways.
A lot of people expect this from them when they get together. They just did that Metal Men story.
The Defenders a couple years ago.
The funny thing, well, we'll get to this, I think, towards the end, but I mean, one of the most iconic modern covers that has been copied numerous times.
Want to make something of it?
Yeah, you know, all the characters looking up at the
camera. They homaged themselves with that cover.
Oh, everyone's homaged this cover. You know, everyone has done it. And if you're not familiar with what this book is about, you know, you have Crisis on Infinite Earths, which sort of is the end for your Silver Age, Bronze Age Justice League. And you have the aftermath after, and it's the Legends miniseries by
John Byrne,
mm-hmm. who does that. And you sort of reintroduce the fact that the DC universe has included all these new characters. Captain Marvel is now in the DC universe. Blue Beetle. Dr. Fate is one of the last surviving JSA members who doesn't go off to limbo. So you have this whole new sort of tapestry of characters to take from. And Justice League, as it was originally called when it first came out, took a lot of these new characters. You know, Dr. Light, who is a new character, Guy Gardner, who wasn't a new character but hadn't really had a lot of time spent on him. They threw them all together into a Justice League book.
Yeah, here's your flagship
kind of,
title.
Yeah, and just kind of pushed them out.
And this is coming out of Justice League Detroit.
Yes,
right. That I mean, this
there was a 1 month difference between them. Justice League Detroit wrapped up. There was a month, and then Justice League came out right around when Crisis happened and when Legends was happening. So it might have been 2 months. I think whenever it came out, but the book is a complete 180
from where
what Justice League is, what you think of when you think of Justice League. I think it was way ahead of its time. I think it is, if you this book came out now, I think it would fit in modern times.
See,
yeah, I mean, it's got a very unique sensibility. It's sort of, in a weird way, Marvelizing, but with a sense of humor to it, like a little bit less of the sad sack portions of the Marvel universe, but putting these characters into like real life situations or like real life interactions, but having them be sort of Woody Allen clever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of the way it comes across. You know, this is the first time we see Blue Beetle in the DC universe, and he comes across as
really
sort of,
okay. I was going to ask you because you obviously were tied to DC more as a kid than I was. Is this the first time that we see Blue Beetle? Is it the first time that we see Captain Marvel as members of
they all
the DCU?
Show up in Legends, which was the John Byrne series. And Blue Beetle had his own series that was kind of going on concurrently towards this. But these characters had never interacted with each other. I mean, I think that's something that's hard to grasp now in hindsight is Ted Kord didn't really have a character. Like, nobody knew anything about him. DC owned the Charlton characters for a long time, but you never saw Ted Kord, you know, like they just owned him. They weren't used for anything, you know, and Captain Marvel was in his own little universe and never interacted with anyone else except for like the rare crossover with Superman that would happen. So this is the first time we see a lot of these characters sort of thrown together, and it sort of defined a lot of these characters after that. I mean, it was weird. It was weird. It was different. There's no, I mean, Batman is the sole A-list character in this book.
Yeah.
Other than that,
well, you look at, I mean, there's Kirby Creations and Mr. Miracle and Oberon, and then Dr. White, the female Dr. White, which
showed up in Crisis. You know, she was a new character too that had just shown up. Dr. Fate survived from the JSA being put into limbo. You know, like they're all just weird. They're not even B-list characters, most of these characters. They're C-list characters.
Almost unknowns. We have John Jones, who is
a Martian Manhunter,
you know, a charter member of the jail. A charter member, right?
Yeah.
So and it gets into that as the book, you know, we get into it that the JLA is very important to him, and he's one of the rocks that the group is kind of put upon. But kind of what we had mentioned a little bit earlier is that this has such a reputation as being a funny book, a comedy book. And as I started reading it, you know, you open up, it's like, okay, where's the jokes? And it's not like that to begin with. I mean, it's the beginning of it is really kind of a conventional getting the
there's
band.
There's a terrorist attack on the UN and the Justice League gets involved. And everyone's kind of clever with each other, but it's not like, I always thought that Giffen and Dave Mateus kind of almost did a disservice to themselves later, you know, when they did like the Super Buddies. I know a lot of people like the Super Buddies is way more jokey than this stuff is. Like, this stuff has humor in it, but it is really legitimately Justice League stories, you know, fighting terrorists, fighting the the people from the superhero, the heroes from Angor, you know, the weird Marvel corollaries from way back in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah, that came to stop the
nuclear, you know, like weird interactions with the Soviets. It's
the gray man story in there is, I mean, that's standard superhero fare. Yeah. Now there are funny moments in it, you know, obviously, and we'll talk about the one hit and the Guy Gardner relationship with everyone. That's where most of the humor comes from, is how everyone reacts to Guy.
What makes it different is they interact in a totally different way that you've never seen DC characters interact, in that they're sort of joking with each other and they have like a coworker personality as opposed to an icon personality.
It is totally an office space type relationship.
Yeah, it's like people that all happen to work together and how like they interact. People have their own roles, like Blue Beetle feels like he doesn't get used properly, and Dr. Fate is this esoteric character who sort of disappears and reappears, and Captain Marvel is really like all the aw shucks type of guy. And Black Canary.
Is the glass ceiling. Don't treat me that way because I'm a woman.
It's like The Office, but with superhero characters, mm-hmm. but they're still doing superhero.
Dr. White is the one that was mistakenly made
hired. And I mean, and it's a good point to bring up that Maxwell Lord is a huge part of this story as well. Yeah. And I know a lot of people, this is another one of those funny things where people are like, oh, Maxwell Lord, there's nothing, you made him nefarious. And I'm like, you read the first seven issues.
He is nefarious.
Yes. I mean, he's suspicious and you don't know what he's up to.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you know, people said, oh, Max Lord is very different in this than the Checkmate Max Lord. Yeah,
this is the same Max Lord as that's in Checkmate.
He's Machiavellian. He's nefarious. He's doing, it's like, by the end of this book, I don't know if he's a good guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I have absolutely no idea.
It's a lot of hindsight when people say stuff like that, because when you reread this stuff, Maxwell Lord's not necessarily a good guy. You don't know what he's up to. In fact, you go through the first seven issues, he's manipulating people.
By the end of this, I would almost say that if I were reading this, you know, back in 19, you know, without knowing what Maxwell Lord turned into, I would still say, you know what? Max Lord is going to end up being a bad guy in this book.
Yeah,
because there is a bigger picture kind of criminal mastermind element to what's going on here.
Yeah.
So he very much so seems to. That I needed to kind of reset my mind when I was reading it is like, this is very much a commentary on the times that it was written
in. Yes, Ronald Reagan is the president.
Yes, he is. And there's a story that is centered around the proliferation of nuclear weapons in the mid 80s. That was a big deal. So this book is very much a commentary on the times that it was written. This book is a product of the mid 80s.
It
no
is very
doubt
much
about
a product it. Of it. Yep.
And down to the wardrobe with Hal Jordan with the the sweater that adorned.
And that's the thing to mention as well, is it's very much Hal Jordan shows up, Superman is in the stories. Yeah. Like, it is very much part of the DC universe at the time. The thing that always impresses me most about it is how likable all the characters are. Like even Guy Gardner.
Even
like
Guy
his
in his own way,
You kind of like him, and when he hits his head and becomes a nice guy, and which I think happens after...
It happened at the end of issue 6 and issue 7. He's acting very weird. And because a rat or a mouse bit him whenever he was looking for his ring.
He hit his
head
on
and, the table.
You know, and it seems kind of silly, but everyone is everyone's really likable and really full of depth. You know, they have like doubts about themselves. They have they worry, you know, like everyone is insecure about how they like interact with everyone else. And it's sort of weirdly endearing. And I always think that to characterize it as just a comedy book, I think actually undercuts some of the really great just overall writing of the series, and that it's very compelling. You're really interested in what happens, and it's awesome to see Batman interact with Guy Gardner.
Oh,
like, oh, that's the best parts of it. Yeah,
it's interesting to see Batman, who really he's the leader of the group to begin with, and he really feels and acts like a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, because everyone's sort of like off in their own world, or like arguing with each other, and he's like,
"All right, come on, children. This is how you're in the league now, and this is how we do this." And
it's all these people, you know. Black Canary had been in the league previously, but everyone else is just a weird mix of all these characters,
except for John. You know,
John had been in the league too, and it's just cool to see them. You know, to see Batman like chide Blue Beetle, and then when Batman finally makes a joke, you know, at some point when it happens, and Blue Beetle is like, was that a joke?
And Black Canary, that's a great line. She's like, well, he made a joke about four or five years ago, and people didn't realize it at the time, so he might be due for
another joke that comes up, and it's sort of weirdly infectious that way, but it's the art as well. We should be remiss if we don't mention
Young Kevin Maguire, though. It's not the Batman Confidential arc that came out last year, the Batwoman or Batgirl Catwoman. That is the Kevin Maguire that I've come to know and love. And so this is a younger Kevin Maguire, I think, as he's just kind of starting to develop his style. It's not the incredibly expressive, or maybe there's just stylistic things that are different now. I mean, it is an expressive book, but it's not as
detailed. But he was doing it monthly as well.
Yes.
But also, you compare it to other books that come out at that same time. I mean, this book. Think about what books looked like in '86, and think about it. This looked different.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it was a talking head book at times, a lot of times, because a lot of the panels were people talking to each other and like the humor between them, but Maguire made it interesting.
Well, it's a relationship book. Yeah. I mean, there are superhero stories in here, and you know, we talked about it. Terrorist attack on the UN, heroes, kind of quote-unquote heroes from another world that are trying to, you know, stop nuclear armament. Yeah. Then you've got this great gray man story. But
Booster Gold shows up, you know.
That was great. I love that. But yeah, it's all about the relationship. We mentioned Office Space. It is. It's an office drama.
Yeah, where these people all work together. Yeah. You know, the cool thing, though, too, is like the heroes that come from Angor, you know, those are old... old hangovers from when the DC Marvel had their unofficial crossovers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those were the Marvel equivalents that got made up like at some point in the 60s. The Silver Sorceress was like Scarlet Witch, you know.
I did not know that.
Well, it's been so long since they'd been used in that similar, you know, in that similar way. But it's just an example of like there's a lot of diving into these characters' past. It's not like they've just suddenly sprouted up. You know, like Miracle Man complains about, like, is the Justice League going to be a job because Barda is going to be pissed if he, you know, if he's like gone constantly.
That was a great scene where she's just like, you know, where are you? You haven't spent 5 minutes with me in the last month. He's like, well, you knew it was going to be like this whenever we talked about it. We didn't talk about it. You and Oberon told me about this.
And we're talking about it like it's a huge talking head book. There's also cool action sequences and battles. It's all the trappings of a comic book, but done in such a weird, different style that I don't even think the same team has recaptured again, like in anything else they've ever done. Like, they've never quite gotten the... I feel like all the later stuff, like when they did Defenders, is way more jokey.
Way more jokey.
And like this was... and even this series, as you go along... Did you like the first one? Did you like this? Would you read more of it?
Oh, absolutely.
I would go all the way up until they're going to do the first four.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about where I think it starts to go downhill. Okay. But yeah, but like all four of those.
That's when it starts to become like intentionally jokey, because there was a subtleness to the humor that was, you know, we'll keep coming back to office humor. It's the small jabs. It's the offhanded comments and that kind of stuff. And then there's the one guy in the office that everyone, you know, can't stand.
The first kind of jokes, wahaha, you know? I believe, is when they're in France.
Uh-huh.
And Booster Gold hits on that woman and fails. And Blue Beetle, like, starts laughing. You know, yeah. That's the first bwahaha where he's like, "I can't believe you struck out with that one. You're such a loser when you did." You know, and
you know, we talked about how much it was commenting on the times.
Yep.
And you look at the media in the
Jack Ryder,
the mid '80s, and how media had started to change from reporting to more commenting on the world around us. And DC has this character in Jack Ryder who this was my
and you forgot Jack Ryder was the creeper.
I'm an idiot. As I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, this reporter, this commentator on TV is such an asshole. And then they get to issue 6, and Jack Ryder, TV reporter, has gone missing, and all of a sudden the creeper shows up on the scene. I'm like, oh shit, Jack Ryder's the creeper. I totally forgot.
Now
that.
You finally started to remember what's going on.
But it's kind of funny. Because you know, the last book club that we had done was a Swamp Thing, and they had Jason Blood and Etrigan.
You forgot that Jason?
No,
Sal
forgot that Jason Blood was Etrigan. But just like in Swamp Thing, here in JLI, they never tell you that Jack Ryder is the creeper. Just like in Swamp Thing, Alan Moore never told you that Jason Blood is Etrigan. So if you didn't know that Jack Ryder and the Creeper are the same person, you would never know, because they never reveal that in here. I just remember
you
that.
You pieced it together.
Yeah.
But
I thought that was very, you know, silly on my part. But but I did notice because of that, it's like, well, they never clued you in that they're the same person.
Yeah, and you also start to see the burgeoning of the Booster Gold Blue Beetle friendship.
Yes,
it's all based on this series, and it's a realistic friendship between two guys. You know, just like they hang out, they work together, they hang out after work. Yeah. That's pretty much how it works.
Yeah, and it really did start that relationship. Back to the Creeper for just a second. Yeah. I love that character, by the way. Creeper, I can't get enough Creeper.
Yes,
but does he come back in this series?
He never joins. I mean, he just sort of shows up in this. He might show up again, but.
Because in the trade, there was, you had asked me if there were any extras in the trade, and there's very, very few. There's a couple pinup pages that they had done at the time, but then there's this this great nice picture of like all of the members of JLI.
Gypsy's in that picture though.
Gypsy is in this picture. Is Gypsy never in JLI?
She shows up again.
Vibes in there. Is that Vibe?
Maybe that was a fake out page that they put out at some point.
Oh, because Creeper is on there.
Vibe is dead and stays dead forever.
Okay, Vibe.
Except for Blackest Night, maybe Vibe comes back. Blackest Night.
Could be. But yeah, they have this whole Red Tornado, never a member of JLI.
No, Captain Atom does show up at the end of the. He shows up at the end of the trade, right? Where they're. Setting up the
yes.
And that's another one of the Charlton characters.
Yeah, Red Rocket. Yeah, Rocket Red and Captain Atom
show up.
join at the end. But I guess this is maybe a fake out.
Might have been a fake out. That's cool. But if you enjoyed this, you should read the rest of it. It gets better even.
Yeah.
Like they go into some storylines involving like, Bialya gets introduced for the first time. That the place where that comedic dictator, the guy who has all the nuclear missiles, that's the same country that Black Adam tears up.
Oh, yeah. My gosh, you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was where that country was introduced for the first time. So all this stuff, I mean, a lot of this stuff is still in play in the DC universe, and that country was introduced and has stuck around for a while. There's mind control, where Blue Beetle tries to kill Batman, and all these great sort of Amanda Waller shows up for a little while.
Nice.
In it, and it's great. It's a great
almost series. I almost thought that the satellite, the killer satellite, which ends up being a fourth world device. Yeah. As I'm reading it, you know, Max Lord, I'm looking at this, you know, reading this, having read DC for the last 3 or 4 years, and I'm like, oh shit, is that Brother Eye? You know?
Yeah, what is Max Lord up to?
Yeah.
But I think it's cool that you read it and thought that, oh yeah, Max Lord's a bad guy.
Yeah. He was a dick. Yeah. Not just a dick. It's, criminal mastermind.
He's manipulating.
Criminal mastermind.
Keep reading those series, because that doesn't go away, at least in my opinion. Max Lord never quite...
comes clean on stuff.
Yeah, he's never always quite manipulating comes for stuff. Yeah, there's something going on with Max Lord that's... always a little bit.
It was always
nefarious.
It was always there
until it gets a little too jokey, and then I think the series kind of falls apart. But they're stopping after the fourth collection, I guess, is what
the fourth hardcover.
The fourth hardcover, which actually I think is
a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's about
where it needs to.
Yeah, I think that's about where you.
That's
need
what
to
about
go
a 2 year run? That's about what 28 issues or so.
Yeah, it'll be about 20. That's right around when I think it kind of starts to lose its focus a little bit, and I think
how long did it go
stretch
for?
Into the '50s with the same tone,
okay.
But then Justice League Europe also started coming out, at the same time.
Different book, two books.
Yeah, there's Justice League International, then it became Justice League Europe, and there was Justice League Europe and Justice League, and like there was two concurrent.
When does Extreme Justice figure into all of this?
Oh, that happens about issue 60. I mean, the same tone stays for about the first 30 issues, and then it kind of you start to see the wear lines. Maguire does less issues, and with the art is so key to how it's done, because so much of it is characters' facial expressions when they're saying things, or like how characters
people need to look funny whenever they're saying funny things.
Yeah, and when you lose that a little bit, you kind of lose the humor in the series as well.
Okay.
But if anyone out there had never read it before, I'm glad this is the first time you read it. This is one of my favorite series.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Well, I'll tell you what. This is not a really deep book that you can get into a lot of introspection and all that. It's just fun. It's fun.
It's
good.
Interesting,
comics.
And I think it was ahead of its time.
Yep.
You think about this in 1986.
Mm-hmm. It's nice that every issue didn't have to recap the previous one.
Yeah.
Which for 1986, pretty much every comic would recap what happened previously. It didn't do that, which I thought was nice.
I just
read Sword of the Atom, which was a mini series that had like a two page recap
the previous issue of it.
Issue.
No, I mean it's
a mini series.
It was ahead of its time visually and writing wise, and I think it's so unique that no one's quite done the same thing since.
So anyway, everyone out there, I hope you enjoyed it and enjoyed this talk about it.
If you liked it,
I'm gonna keep getting them.
Hello, Chris, Brian, and Tom. This is Michael O'Dea from Most People Are DJs. Sorry I missed you a few weeks ago when I meant to make it out there and did not. But I did want to let you know that I read Justice League International. I had never read this any of the Justice League International stories. I've read different incarnations, heard a lot about this one, and you guys brought it up, said you were going to do it, and I thought this would be a good opportunity to check it out. So I did order it from In Stock Trades, just like you said. It's a great-looking trade for the price. And I got to say, you can kind of sum this up in the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'll go through the good first. The good is the stories were fun. You know, they weren't the weighty stories, kind of almost a breath of fresh air compared to a lot of stuff that's so heavy that you read today. The action was fun. The character interaction was great. I mean, you get some of this character interaction these days in Justice League between Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, but you really started to see some of the interaction and development between the characters here. Really liked Blue Beetle. I had not read a lot of Blue Beetle. I did read The Death of Ted McCord, and I like his character a lot. I kind of wish he had stuck around a little bit more, so I will be going back just to read more of him. The stories were humorous, but it wasn't like the slapstick satire I thought it might be. I had always heard people talk about it, and they talked about it like they weren't really serious at all, but in fact, they are. They're good stories. So enjoyed all of that. The bad now. The infighting between Batman and Guy Gardner got a little tedious. A little too much of that. It reminded me of the bantering back and forth between the Thing and Johnny from Fantastic Four. To a point, it's funny, but then it just gets overdone. The villains weren't really villains in these stories. Now, later on, they might come across some real villains, and you got this question about what's his name is really up to, what Maxwell Lord is really up to. So I'm sure that comes into play later as to if how bad of a guy he really is. But I wanted a really bad guy in one of these arcs, and you didn't really get that. And I'm really undecided on if I like the use of real history people within the book. You had uses of Ronald Reagan, which we do have presidents. They normally will go to some kind of facsimile of the current president in office, but this one seemed to go a lot further than that. You had Gorbachev from Russia. I don't know if I was crazy about that because, yeah, I was alive in the 80s, so I could relate to these. But if I wasn't alive in the 80s, I'm not sure that the in-references that they were using or just in general, would I find it amusing that they use these characters. The ugly. There's not much ugly here, but I got to tell you, man, I am so upset that Black Canary's costume was not better. I mean, Black Canary has possibly the hottest, most attractive outfit a superhero could have ever. And to redo that, it really, come on, guys, that was really disappointing. I liked most of the other costumes. I really liked the appearance of Dr. Fate. It was just put him back in the good. I love Dr. Fate, supernatural characters. I'm left with one question, though, because I hadn't read this before. When does the Bwahaha come in? I kept hearing it. You know, everybody talks about Justice League International, Bwahaha. So I was reading it all the time, expecting that to come in. It must come later. I want to thank you guys for figuring out this, for suggesting Justice League International, because it was a lot of fun. And like I say, in between all the reading I've been doing lately, this was just a really nice change of pace.
Well, now I guess we should probably unveil our new book club selection. You have also picked one that is very deep.
Nerdy. Picked the nerdiest book ever. JLA Avengers by Busick and George Perez. Maybe the nerdiest book of all time.
I can't wait to talk to you about this. You and I both own the I don't think it's called the Absolute. It's the Deluxe. It's the Absolute.
The trade just came out like a couple months ago after fucking years of
it was a long time to come out for the trade, and you can get that, of course, at instocktrades.com. They have it for 47% off the cover price. It is $10.59. So
get it. If you like Marvel and you don't read DC, read it. If you read DC and you don't like Marvel and you never read Marvel, get it. It's completely the most respectful book, the most reverent book of both universes, and just love, like,
well, what I love about it,
and superhero, just how awesome superhero.
We'll talk about it obviously in depth in the next book club episode. But Kurt Busiek and George Perez worked on both titles, so you couldn't have asked for a better team, because they were tied to both the Avengers and the Justice League. So this will be a nice trip for people that have never read this series, or
awesome.
Avengers fans that haven't read the JLA, or JLA fans that haven't read the Avengers.
It's awesome. It's fun.
And it has every member of both teams.
And it has so many Easter eggs. It has so many, like, little scenes.
It's
It's incredible. It's fun.
Yep.
You'll spend forever reading it too, because you're gonna like, oh, that's in the background, that's the cover to this Avengers issue, but instead of Hawkeye, it's Green Arrow. You know, like this little it's all these little jokes like that.
Nice. And it is a story that DC has kind of continued to keep in its continuity.
Yes. It still ties into continuity in the DC universe. Yep. It's with Busick stories, definitely.
If you read Trinity, there are JLA Avengers references.
JLA
there.
Avengers directly affects Busick's JLA crime syndicate storyline.
Yep.
Directly, like, it is a direct continuation. Like, the events of that affect the DC universe. So
there you go. Fun. Get it. I hope you enjoyed this. Once again, this is not a regular Around Comics episode. For those, you can come back on Monday, and we've got a nice talk.
Read more Justice League International. It's all good.
It is. I'm looking forward to it, Tom. I will talk to you about
long.
It as I go along.
It was so long to have it come out collected.
Too long.
Oh, God. It should have been collected a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I actually have the first hardcover, Ron Richards. Told me to get it whenever I was at the DCBS sale, so I have to give that to him in September. So, all right, let's wrap this one up. Check back in 6 weeks or so for our JLA.
We've
Avengers.
Already read it, so
yeah, it shouldn't.
I'll
that
read
long.
It again. I love reading that.
Yeah,
book.
Yeah. I'm gonna go back and look at the original one that was never printed. But you can get that at InStockTrades.com. We'll be back again on Monday with a regular full length episode. In the meantime,
you want to make something of it. From Guy Gardner.
We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
One hit!
I feel it. Oh, we never talked about one
hit.
We
never talked about one hit.
Batman hitting Guy Gardner in the face. It was awesome. Black Canary.
She missed. I can't believe I missed.
If you're